Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
We love the 1980s wrestling era when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lainey Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Big men in this
282 pounds, and it's all muscle, it's all men. And I'll tell you something, a 20-man battle royal, I love something like that. You know why I like that? Because bones start breaking and men, big strong men, start crying. And you know when they cry? When I whack them right in the head with this. This is called the hammer, and I could beat any man in the world with. And I understand Andre the Giant is in there, 7'4", 7'6", 8 feet. Who cares? When I hit him with this, boom, he's going to be knocked out cold, and I'll just flip him over the top rope, and I'll flip all those other guys over the top rope, and I'll be the winner. $50,000. You know, I could think about retirement with money like that. Yeah, that would be real nice. $50,000.
Hello and welcome to the Hogan Era Podcast. I am your host, JP John Paz, right here on the two-man power trip of wrestling's podcasting empire, part of the TMPT feed. I am, of course, the one-man power trip that runs the two-man power trip here each and every week on the show. We're talking about the greatest era ever in the history of professional wrestling, 1984 to 1993 in the WWF, also known affectionately as the Golden Era. We, of course, call it the Hogan Era, the era that made Vince McMahon into a billionaire. the era that launched a lot of careers and a lot of fandoms. Where would wrestling be right now without the immortal Hulk Hogan? Who knows? But not only are we talking about guys like Hulk Hogan, we're talking about Ultimate Warrior, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Macho Man Randy Savage, Sergeant Slaughter, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Andre the Giant, King Kong Bundy, Big John Studd, the Iron Sheik, and so many others. Not only are we talking about those guys, we're also talking about some of the great tag teams of that era, the Bulldogs, Demolition, the Hart Foundation, the Conquistadors, the Killer Bees, and you name it. We've talked about it here on the show. We've talked about some crazy gimmicks, some interesting gimmicks, some goofy gimmicks on the show. We've talked about some of the guys from past, aka the 70s going into the 80s, that were also part of the Hogan era. We're talking about guys that were a big part of the era, but maybe are a little bit of unsung heroes of the era. Today, let's go into enhancement talent, aka carpenters. Some people say they're job guys, but not me. You won't hear that from me. This guy is one of my favorite, if you want to say enhancement guys, just one of the best. Today we're talking about Iron Mike Sharp. Maybe Canada's greatest athlete, perhaps? He used to think so. But as far as Iron Mike Sharp is concerned, man, what a run in WWF. If you really look at it, he was in WWF in 1983, basically off and on all the way until 1995. So say what you will, oh, he lost so many matches on TV, you know, he did so many jobs, he lost all the time, this and that. You can say whatever you want. The guy had a basically 13-year run in the biggest company in the world. So like him, hate him, think he lost too much or didn't win enough on TV. I mean, whatever you want to say about him, he was in WWF for a very, very long time. And of course, during the Hogan era, 84 to 93, he's basically there the whole time, pretty much. And then obviously he's there a little bit after, and he was there a little bit before. So as far as Iron Mike Sharp is concerned, I know we won't get into it too much, but you can actually go into the TMPT archives if you want to listen more about Iron Mike Sharp's history and some of his training. Listen to an old episode I did with Crowbar, a.k.a. Devin Storm. You can listen to old interviews I've done with Mike Moraldo, a.k.a. Starling, and a couple guys from the New Jersey indie scene back in the day that were trained by Iron Mike Sharp, and they have great stories of him training, even some crazy stories about some OCD issues he had, and even there's been some wrestlers that I've had on the show throughout the years, and they've talked about how he would get locked in the arenas at shows because he had to take showers over and over because he couldn't get over the OCD. He didn't want to touch anything. Didn't want to be dirty. So he kept going through his routine and getting stuck at the building. We won't get into that too much today, but if you want to go in the archives and check out some of those stories about Iron Mike Sharp, just go into the TMPT feed and check that out today. Just want to start off with an interesting note. My first show, basically June 1990, as far as going to the shows. I mean, when I first started watching, it was about 1984, fell in love with Hulk Hogan, fell in love with the business, and the rest is history. But as far as going to the shows, the first guy that ever came out for a live show, I was 7 years old at this point, the first guy that ever came out was Iron Mike Sharp. And my dad's good friend was actually arguing with him. And I just sat there in amazement of what the hell he's arguing with Iron Mike Sharp. Iron Mike Sharp was coming back at my dad's friend, who was insane. Such a nice, funny guy. But man, it was, I don't know, it was almost like a comedy sketch. They were like yelling at each other, going back and forth, cursing at each other. It was great. But it's great to see that Iron Mike Sharp, even during a house show in East Rutherford, New Jersey, at the Brendan Byrne Arena, Continental Airlines would become later on. Great to see, you know, the kayfabe wasn't dead. That if a guy's going to curse you off from the crowd, you're going to heal it up and you're not going to take any crap. But it was great. So Iron Mike Sharp and Hercules was the first match I've ever went to live, and just awesome to have that memory of Iron Mike Sharp and just still laugh about it to this day. Like, well, we're 7 years old and my dad's friend is cursing at Iron Mike Sharp and Iron Mike Sharp is cursing back at us. Just funny, funny, good stuff. Loved my time at that show. Rick Rude and the Ultimate Warrior. Easy for me to say, main event of that very first show that I went to, but I digress. As far as Iron Mike Sharp is concerned, let's start off back pre-Hogan era. 1980 was technically his debut. It's only one match, but that's his technical debut of WWF. It was a WWF heavyweight championship title, number one contendership, $15,000, 16-man battle royal, and it was won by Larry Zbyszko. That was 5 May 19th, 1980. Easy for me to say again there. in Madison Square Garden, New York, New York. It went about 11 minutes and 30 seconds, but Larry Zbyszko would get the win there and challenge Bob Backlund for the title. Then his next match was 1/12/1982, where he beat Steve King at Irvington, New Jersey at a live house show event. Then the next time he'd have a match was 2/15/1983. Iron Mike Sharp defeated Pete Sanchez and Barry Hart on the same day from the Agricultural Hall in Allentown, PA, part of WWF Championship Wrestling TV taping. One match went 2 minutes, one match went 3 minutes. But that was just his start, as he was, you know, not losing here when he first went WWF in 83. I mean, he's basically on a gigantic winning streak where he basically only loses for a long time to by a DQ, and that was to Tony DeGuria, Rocky Johnson, two guys who were pretty much stars of that era. He'd actually, on 4/30/83, get a WWF championship match on the Prism Network, and he would defeat Bob Backlund. Even on MSG Network earlier, he defeated Johnny Rods and on the Madison Square Garden Network, and then get the title shot on the Prism Network, loses to Bob Backlund, 20-minute match, too, at the Spectrum. So nothing to shake a stick at there. My Iron Mike Sharp was getting a good push in the WWF in 1983. There's no doubt about that. Get some big wins over, you know, I guess you could say lower guys, enhancement guys, like Jules Strongbow, SD Jones, Tony Garea again. But, you know, him and the Magnificent Morocco got a win over Chief J. Strongbow and Jules Strongbow, the Strongbow brothers. So not too shabby here. He's only taking losses to Pat Patterson and Tatsumi Fujinami and Jimmy Snuka here in 1983, as he would really kind of be on a bit of a tear. And I know that would be a little bit different than what we would expect or what you'd see from Iron Mike Sharp much later on in his career. He did fight Don Morocco in late 83 for the Intercontinental Championship at a MSG show. He takes a loss. Man, he did get quite a bit of a run. He got quite a bit of a push, kind of pre-Hogan era. He was really, you know, on a bit of a roll. But as the Hogan era rolls around, 1984 rolls around, he's taking a Intercontinental title loss to Tito Santana, part of a tag team championship match. Him and the legendary Frank Williams lose to Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson on 3/6/84. Then he has another championship match, Intercontinental title, 3/17/84, loses to Tito Santana there. WWF on USA Network from Landover, Maryland, 7/28/84 on TV, loses to Tony Garea in 6 minutes. Then him and Troy Alexander take a loss to Bret Hart and Dynamite Kid, a part of Maple Leaf Wrestling TV taping. Probably the first signs that the Stampede Wrestling is coming to an end, as Bret and Dynamite are getting set to come to WWF basically about 6 or 7 months down the road. But since the taping was in Brantford, Ontario, might as well give the hometown boys some wins. The Fabulous Freebirds are even in the WWF here in 1984. 84 was kind of a weird transitional time, WWF. Obviously, Hogan never starts, but they were bringing in a lot of different talent. But the Fabulous Freebirds, Buddy Roberts, Michael Hayes, and Terry Gordy defeated Aldo Moreno, Iron Mike Sharp, and Rusty Brooks. Only a 2-minute match from the WWF Championship Wrestling TV taping from Poughkeepsie, New York. Takes some losses to B. Brian Blair, but then gets a win back against Brian Blair. So they're exchanging some wins back and forth, but does take a few losses to Sergeant Slaughter and to the legendary Junkyard Dog. He does have quite a nice showing in New Japan Pro Wrestling. He does a tour over there as Mike Sharp Jr. Obviously, his dad's a legendary Canadian wrestler, so usually that's what happens in Japan. They try to give you the junior there, give you an instant kind of credibility, given that your dad was a big name. So he did pretty good over there in Japan. Does take a loss to Tatsumi Fujinami. He's in a couple tag matches with the legendary Antonio Inoki, teaming up with Bob Backlund, taking the loss to Inoki and Tatsumi Fujinami on some shows. He does even team up with Andre the Giant on some shows. So very interesting kind of in 1985 that Iron Mike Sharp is still, you know, he's still taken pretty damn seriously in Japan. His last match in Japan, as far as 1985 is concerned, 6/13/85, he actually defeated a very young Keiji Muto, aka the Great Muta. So interesting little tidbit there of maybe a little trivia question. Who did Mike Sharp beat in his last tour in 85 in Japan? Keiji Muto, the Great Muta. Pretty nuts. He would then come back to the States, back to WWF in 85, July, U.S. Express, the WWF Tag Team Champions, defeated Mike Sharp and Jerry Adams for 4 minutes in Brantford, Ontario, Canada. As you're kind of rolling through the WWF, it's not one of those things where Iron Mike Sharp does have a legendary career or a huge run, but he's one of those guys that nobody can kind of forget. You'll always remember him. On 8/10/1985, Iron Mike Sharp and Lanny Poffo go to a 20-minute time limit draw at Madison Square Garden. Pretty insane if you think about it. I mean, there's 22,000 people there. They're all, you know, crazy. They want to see Andre. They want to see the Macho Man. And they get Iron Mike Sharp and Lanny Poffo going 20-minute time limit draw. Pretty crazy for 1985, but you got to love it for sure. The Killer Bees. 9/22/85, part of primetime wrestling TV tapings. Killer Bees defeated Iron Mike Sharp and Tiger Chung Lee in about 13 minutes, a long match from the Maple Leaf Gardens. He gets another Intercontinental Championship match against Tito Santana, loses in 13 minutes and 30 seconds at the Montreal Forum in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. He does get some TV wins and even a TV win over SD Jones, part of primetime wrestling Maple Leaf Gardens. Iron Mike Sharp defeated SD Jones in 5 minutes and 30 seconds there. What a run, though, if you look at it. It's like, starts off pretty strong, but he doesn't necessarily lose to guys that are on the bottom of the totem pole, at the bottom of the rung. He is getting wins over them, but he is taking losses to guys like George Wells and Tony Atlas and Pedro Morales, but he is getting time on the draws against Lanny Poffo and wins over Tony Parisi. So interesting. And then King Tonga, aka Haku, is there. He beats Iron Mike Sharp on a bunch of house shows. He's taking TV losses to Dan Spivey. And even the British Bulldogs defeated Iron Mike Sharp and the Brooklyn Brawler in 3 minutes, all-star wrestling taping in the beginning of 1986. Crazy. Like, he's always on TV, not necessarily going to be on pay-per-views or, you know, getting a big push or anything like that, but he is all over the TVs. It's pretty crazy. He's on all these primetime wrestlings. He's on the MSG network. He's on the Prison network. He's on the NESN network. He's on Superstars. He's on primetime. He's even a part of some Saturday night's main events. So, I mean, he's all over the television, believe it or not. He defeated SD Jones at a Saturday night's main event taping in Providence, believe it or not. He's losing to Siva Afi on the MSG network. He's losing to George Steele and Junkyard Dog. But he's on TV. He's really, you know, he's making a name for himself, becoming pretty noticeable with that awesome, I guess you would call it a little wrist brace, if you will. The leather wrist brace that he always had that made himself pretty damn noticeable. And to be honest, kind of unforgettable. I know you could say, hey, he was Canada's greatest athlete, and that was kind of said in vain. But hey, you got to stick to it, and you got to make yourself memorable one way or another. Just one of those guys that you could say, hey, you know, what do you remember about him? Hey, I remember a long WWF run, and I remember him being on TV and him building up a lot of television equity from being on TV for that long and that many years. Takes a bunch of losses to the American Express, the new U.S. Express, now known as the American Express, Spivey and Rotundo now with Wyndham gone. Takes some losses to the Rougeau brothers, loses to George Steele, Junkyard Dog, Pedro Morales again is reaping his head out there. George Wells, King Tonga, Tito Santana, Cousin Luke, the British Bulldogs. And this is all as we head into 1987. Still there. Love that. Hey, you there? Still there. The Killer Bees as 87 rolls in, the Can-Am connection of Rick Martel and Tom Zink as well. When you're looking at some matches and some guys that he wrestled, you say, okay, he's wrestling some of these undercard guys. How about some main eventers? Yes. As we look into late 87 and we're heading into 88, he does have a bunch of house show losses and dark match losses on Saturday night's main event to the Ultimate Warrior, who's obviously destined for greatness. He does take a bunch of losses to the legendary Tom McGee as well. Loses to Coco Beware, loses to Sam Houston, but he does have wins over Brady Boone and Outback Jack over that same time period. Loses to Macho Man Randy Savage on a Superstars taping with Bad News Brown. Actually gets the win over the Rougeau brothers on a house show. Then on MSG, the Rougeau brothers would defeat King Harley Race and Iron Mike Sharp in 9 minutes and 30 seconds. Wow, awesome team there. King Harley Race. Wow, that's pretty good. Then takes a bunch of losses to Strikeforce, and the British Bulldogs takes a loss to Junkyard Dog on TV, as well as Bam Bam Bigelow. Loses to Ken Patera and Don Morocco as well. Takes losses to the Rockers and the Powers of Pain. Loses to the Young Stallions with tag team partner Sandy Beach. Loses to the Rockers once again with tag partner Brooklyn Brawler. Loses to Jim Powers and loses to B. Brian Blair. He was a part of the 1988 King of the Ring, which was, of course, in Providence, Rhode Island on 10-16-88. He defeated Boris Dukov in the first round, 6 minutes 30 seconds, before losing in the second round to the Red Rooster, Terry Taylor. The winner of the King of the Ring 88 was Ted DiBiase. He actually defeated Macho Man Randy Savage, who's the world champion, but he defeated him by a DQ to win the 1988 King of the Ring. Takes a bunch of losses as we scroll through 88 to Demolition, to Barry Horowitz, to Boris Dukov, to Nikolai Volkov, to Harley Race, to Coco Beware, to Paul Roma, to the Rugged One himself, Ronnie Garvin, before eventually losing as well to Greg Valentine, the Honky Tonk Man, Sam Houston, Paul Roma, Jim Powers, Tim Horner, the Red Rooster, and even, believe it or not, here's another little trivia question, in 1989, to Steve Blackman. Yes, that Steve Blackman. Loses a tag team title match with Sandy Beach to the Demolition. Loses to Jimmy Superfly Snuka as we roll into 1990, where he's then losing to Bret Hart. This time actually losing to Brady Boone and losing a bunch of matches on house shows to the Big Boss Man and to Tugboat as well. A ton of TV matches here. All these are all TV matches. Jim Duggan, Jim Powers, Jim Snuka, Nikolai Volkov, Bushwhackers, and the Hart Foundation, and the Big Boss Man, all defeating Iron Mike Sharp before losing, of course, a bunch of matches to the Rugged One, Ronnie Garvin. That's pretty much as we roll through 1990. He is not in really part of WWF in 1991. Not really sure why. He's just not there. I don't know if they just stopped booking him, if he was injured. Don't know the real story behind that. Would love to know if anybody knows. Hit me up, DM me, email me. I would love to know the reason behind that. But he's back again in 1992, losing to Bret Hart over the Intercontinental Championship, losing to LOD, losing to the British Bulldog, losing to Jeff Jarrett, losing to High Energy, losing to Marty Jannetty as well. Then as we roll through into 1993, of course, this is the Monday Night Raw era. He is in the 15-man Battle Royal on Raw number 5 from the Manhattan Center in New York, New York, won by Razor Ramon. Him and Von Kruss, a.k.a. Big Vito, also lose to High Energy. Raw taping number 4, also from the Manhattan Center in New York, New York, takes a loss to the Steiner Brothers on television, then Jim Duggan, then Owen Hart, then the Smoking Guns, before eventually taking a bunch of house show losses to Virgil and Phil Apollo. On Wrestling Challenge 361, loses to Tatanka, 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And as we roll through the end of the Hogan era, really his last losses are to Marty Jannetty, Razor Ramon, Jim Duggan, Men on a Mission, 1-2-3 Kid, and then finally Tatanka. Man, crazy. What a run. And then obviously all through 93, he does stay there as Hogan leaves and the Hogan era ends. He's still there, losing to Mr. Perfect, Owen Hart, Doink, Bob Backlund, and so many others. He is actually a part of the 1994 Royal Rumble that was held at Madison Square Garden. The legendary one, if you find it, it's on YouTube. Really good. Go out of your way. I know this is post-Hogan era, but I got to recommend it. 1-17-1994. And this Royal Rumble match was an hour and 10 minutes, won by Owen Hart. Then he really stays the WWF basically until May of 1995. His last match was like with Dwayne Gill, losing to the Smoking Guns on Superstars, and they lost in 3 minutes and 30 seconds. So maybe not a lot of wins. Maybe not a guy you're going to remember as far as being an icon or legend, anything like that, but great enhancement talent, great carpenter, one of the unforgettable stars of that era. If you're a wrestling fan, you know Iron Mike Sharp. All right, let's wrap it up. Hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Hit up TeePublic, tpublic.com/store/TMPT. Also, go to Patreon, patreon.com/TMPTempire for more. Thank you, everybody, for listening. See you right back here next time for a little Hogan Era Podcast. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two-Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two-Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.
Of anything to do with ICAPRO. No outlandish before and after claims. There's no snake oil here. We're talking about sports nutrition, the most revolutionary thing in sports nutrition today. ICAPRO. Davey Boy. Look at the action. Oh, my God. Hard drive. Takedown. Davey Boy is all over Big Iron Mike.
The British Bulldog is definitely ready for SummerSlam.
And no doubt we spoke with the Hart family a little bit earlier on, Stu and Helen Hart, both very much concerned on the welfare of either their son-in-law, as we are seeing now, Davey Boy Smith, or their son, the Hitman Bret Hart.
Well, you know, Bret Hart, second generation wrestler. I say the British Bulldog's ready, but believe me, I know Bret the Hitman Hart, and being a second generation wrestler, he knows how to prepare himself for a title match.
I'm sure of that as well, but do you really believe what you said earlier on, that these two really have no love for each other, that in fact, each man perhaps would do not only what they had to do to win the match, but perhaps injure the other?
Well, that could happen. Yeah, I'm going to stay to that. But it's a matter of money also, you know. There's a lot of money involved here.
Look at the power of Davey Boy Smith. And the cover, it could be over now.
And you, when you work for something all these years like the British Bulldog and Bret Hart have done, the money is what it's all about in a match like this, as well as the Intercontinental Championship belt. And there's a lot at stake. The family, it's going to be torn to pieces.
It's kind of like you said earlier on. Ooh, my family feud.
Exactly.
Iron Mike Sharp hammering on the back of the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith. All the SummerSlam action headed to you via pay-per-view. It is a SummerSlam you thought you'd never see before. Oh my, 80,000 fans have purchased their tickets. The sellout at SummerSlam weeks and weeks ago.
Iron Mike looks pretty good here.
Iron Mike is very good. Whoa! Davey Boy Smith, just like that, turns it around. And if this happens to the Hitman, he could very well get the same result. Davey Boy Smith building momentum. But just approximately 3 weeks away. Looking forward to locking up with the Hitman, Bret Hart, for the championship.
Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's UnderdogFantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
We love the 1980s wrestling era when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lanny Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
This clip is brought to you by SaveWithConrad.com.
So after this, you're back on the road in the Northeast working with Iron Mike Sharp.
Yeah.
Before we talk about everything else on Owen, it feels like every time I bring up Iron Mike Sharp to anyone who knew him, these legendary showers come up. You're just shaking your head. Tell me about an Iron Mike Sharp shower.
Well, before we get into, and I've got a little method to this madness, what I think is sort of the story behind the story of these legendary showers. And I'm sure you've heard the ones of him getting locked in the building and, you know, he stays around a dressing room forever and ever. But so in Tennessee, some guys wore baby oil and some didn't, but right. You know, night in, night out. And I'm talking about to shine up and look good going through the curtain. Iron Mike took baby oil to a whole nother level. I mean, bathed in baby oil. So on the very first lockup, you were touching this and look, I'm what, 23, 24, and Iron Mike's probably 20 years older than me or something like that. And he's got that wrist thing that he puts around that stunk like worn leather that it actually was. And when you lock up, you know, the beads of sweat, he's already pouring with sweat because he's done 500 half Hindu squats before he walks out there. Mike was in really good shape, but yeah. The reason he took so many long showers, I think is you got to do that to rinse all that damn baby oil off.
Mm. But,
yeah. And I got to work with Mike.
How slippery was he?
Very slippery, but you know what? I my hat's off to him. I'm a young guy and you know, he asked like the etiquette was, hey, can you do this? And I was very, you know, I'll say raised the right way, Mike, whatever you want to do. Well, what can you do? What would you like for me to do, Mike? You tell me, and I want to make it work for you. And we finally got out, hey, I can drop kick. I can do this. Okay, great. And we went out and he led me through, you know, a great opening match or whatever it may be. But I got nothing but fond memories of old Iron Mike.
When you're first on the road and you're working these matches with Mike Sharp, are you getting any time with Owen or when's your first opportunity to really catch up with him, learn about the man behind the television character and the wrestler, if you will?
And that is something that we did talk about, I'll say 93-ish, 90, whatever, is that it's not like we ever had a, hey, Jeff Jarrett, nice to meet you. Oh, Owen Hart, nice to meet you. It was, oh, hey, man, Owen, hey, how you doing? Yeah, you can dress in here. Because when they came to Memphis, there was no breaking in. There was no, and that's just something that I guarantee I'm going to get emotional. But because when I start thinking about those kind of things, There was no, hey, I wonder, this guy's a pretty nice guy. You know, that we all sort of do subtly in our mind that, hey, this guy seems like a nice guy, whatever it may be. But we never had that. It was friends from day one. I'll say that.
Hey, it's Conrad Thompson. Thanks for checking out the podcast here on YouTube. Be sure to hit the subscribe button and the notifications bell so you get a notice anytime we upload some new content. And go save yourself some money right now. If you're in a 30-year loan or you have credit card debt, it's not a matter of if I can save you money. It's a matter of how much. Find out right now for free at SaveWithConrad.com.